Another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, rbnrepublicbroadcasting.org. It is your place for free speech, and maybe your only place for free speech, because speech, they are coming down like a ton of bricks. But are we bricklayers? I don't know. You can figure it out for yourself, but what I do know is you should go to republicbroadcasting.org, send a check. I don't ask you to send me any money. I do ask you to send John Stattmiller money at republicbroadcasting.org, because he makes it all possible. And I do ask you to download the Concertify app, because it's just awesome. And it is a template for so many things we need to do. We're having platforms taken away from us. Guess what? This is its own app. It's its own platform. Download it and learn about the kosher question. Okay, today is Monday. Monday has always been the day for Mark Collett, which I know a lot of you look forward to. But I'm having scheduling changes, and because of the hour that I record with Mark, it's become necessary to switch him to Tuesday, and he very graciously agreed to switch to Tuesday. So this, I'm recording with our good friend Cato, who is able to record at this hour. We're recording on a Sunday for Monday broadcast. Cato, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Slattery. Hello, everyone. Ha-ja-ho.
Ha-ho. And, all right, so here's the thing. So we've got all this virus stuff and vaccination stuff going on. We had totally real fake president Joe Biden, Joseph R. Biden, give a really deranged speech, a demented speech. I'm still glad that he most awesomely withdrew from Afghanistan. That's a big deal, even if he doesn't know he did it. But this speech was thoroughly demented, and he's trying to incite violence against unvaccinated people and whatnot. So there is a I'm not going to say a China connection to this, but I mean, because there's a China connection to everything in the world nowadays. China's a big country, and you can't get too many degrees removed from China. You know, people say the virus came from China, whatever. Maybe it came to China. I don't know. But what I want to get into first, and then we can talk about anything, is how China is responding and what are its vaccines like. So I'm kicking it over to you, Cato.
All right. Well, so yes, this is a very serious matter in China. They are indeed taking this very seriously. They're not dismissing it like us in the dissident right would here in the United States. China is
Andrew Anglin has his take, and I don't know if you're familiar.
Yeah, it's the I'm reading it now. Is it the China investigates virus finds that the United States has 4,000 times the infection rate? Is that the article?
No, but he said that people say, oh well, the virus must be real because China's going along with it. And I'm not saying the virus isn't real, but Andrew Anglin says there's no. So Andrew's take is that with the United States, China's global rivals like the United States and Europe crashing their own economies, why get in the way? And I don't know if that's true. I mean, maybe they would do that, or maybe they legitimately think there is a virus going around, which is a certain amount of a public health hazard. I don't know. Do you know?
Well, it could be a combination of both. Yeah, I know what you're talking about, where I have this article in front of me. Yeah, he says, quote, "Many wonder why the Chinese have embraced the coronavirus hoax. The short answer is they haven't. The long answer is that they do not want to interrupt the West in the middle of this project to collapse their own society, so they are pretending to go along with it. They generally avoid mass testing, but when they do the testing, they use a very low PCR cycle, assuring that only those currently infected with a cold, real coronavirus, will test positive. These tests, they have been successful in virtually eradicating the virus, and they then go on to keep business open." Well, yeah, so basically the situation in China is like this. Yes, they are very strict. Yes, it is from a province municipality by province municipality basis. So, you know, different cities will have their own testing policies and requirements, and then different provinces will have their own depending on how many cases are in that region. And, you know, one of the things that China has is very proud of is that they have said that they've been able to potentially get the coronavirus to near zero cases. Of course, a lot of this can just be, you know, not exaggerating the numbers like the United States does, which is to exaggerate the numbers.
Or some in the mainstream would say by hiding the numbers.
Well, the Western propaganda media is going to say what they're going to say about it.
They're going to say what they're going to say.
Exactly. But we know the truth, as we've seen here. It's the United States is the one that's exaggerating it. China's not the one hiding it. It's the U.S. that's exaggerating it. And but in terms of the testing and the way the lockdown procedures go, yes, they are definitely more on the stricter side of things, but this is nothing new to China. This has been a standard protocol basically since the beginning of the COVID. Yes, they had a really hard lockdown in Wuhan for the 6 weeks, and since then they've had this protocol of okay, if there's a case in an area, everyone has to go and get tested. Now, one could question whether the ways they do the testing, whether it's efficient or not, is one thing, because you do have long lines forming outside. But their policy is basically, we want to try to get as close to zero COVID cases as possible. So if there's one COVID case, then the whole area gets tested. The entire several city blocks. So that, yes, it's obviously, if that were to happen in the United States, that would be completely no-no, and we would totally be against it. But that's China, so.
So, you know, I really wonder how viable that is, because it would seem to me that you can't keep out the virus. Sooner or later, it's going to get in. And my feeling was last year, when the United States was doing all this slow the spread, flatten the curve, all they were doing, and I think intentionally at the upper levels, was keeping the pandemic going on long enough to roll out the vaccines. But here's something. I have a lawyer friend in Japan, and he tells me, and I think this makes sense for what I know about Japan, and I think it probably would make sense for a whole lot of countries around the world, is, you know, they don't have independent, you know, their own nationals who go over and do real journalism, real investigative journalism in the United States or in Europe. There's a language issue. So they might have, you know, the NHK, the national broadcaster, they might have a London bureau. But even the people at the London bureau are just sitting in an office reading the Financial Times. They're not actually tracking anything down. The people in the Washington bureau, and I've met them. I've gone to the, you know, there's a Washington press building, I guess it's called the Foreign Press Building, and it's a couple blocks from the White House, and I've been there. And these people sit around and they read the Washington Post and the New York Times, and they've got CNN on, and they're not going out and doing their own investigative journalism. And what that means is what the vast majority of the world, including the elites in these other countries, the information they're getting is coming from our own Jewish media. And so, and then in a country like Japan, and probably other countries, but certainly a country like Japan that has actual elections, then you've got pressure on the politicians. So The American media, so the local media recycles the Jewish American media's narrative. The people get freaked out. The freaked out people put pressure on their politicians, and then the politicians implement these corona policies. That's what he told me, and I think that's pretty plausible, not just for Japan, but for a lot of places. I don't know how China, I mean, China's so big, and China's much more independent than most other countries. I don't know if that would be a plausible scenario in China.
Well, the thing is, let me say about Japan's media real quick. If you read the Japan Times, in the front page, the very top title, it will actually say a branch of the New York Times right below it. So there you go. The Japan Times is actually a branch of the New York Times. But yeah, Chinese media, there's no Western subversion at all in Chinese media. It's all the media is controlled by the state. In China, I think in the past you said that China has a state-run media, while the United States has a media-run state.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, yeah. So China's
there's media, something to that.
What?
It must have been a very wise man who said that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. It's it's but it's true. I mean, China's media is controlled by the state for the reason that they don't want any subversion from the West, from the United States in particular. So, you know, when the Chinese do the research, I mean, they do have, if you go onto CCTV, you know, CGTN, which is the English, you know, the global version of Chinese media, China Global Television Network, and you see that they have all, you know, reporting in different countries, and they've actually done some pretty good reporting recently on the Taliban, and they've actually interviewed people in Afghanistan asking their opinions about the Taliban. It's, you know, their honest opinions, and let's just say it's completely different than what the Jewish-dominated Western media wants to frame. But at the end of the day, though, the thing is, because everything is all interconnected, and there is a global narrative that is, unfortunately, is still dominated by the American Empire, and that global narrative is very hard to challenge outright. Especially for even, you know, rising superpowers like Russia and China, they still have to regurgitate some of that global narrative, but, you know, in their own way. Mm-hmm. So what we're seeing in the Chinese media, yeah, they're still, you know, they still go along with, you know, the narrative to an extent, but then they have their own spin on it, to where they take that narrative and they turn it around against the, you know, the people who have come up with the global narrative, which is the American Empire.
Okay, now what about their vaccines? What kind of vaccines do they have, and to what extent are people coerced into taking them or pressured into taking them?
Well, in China, so the vaccines in China, they're not an RNA, this mRNA, you know, gene altering therapy, whatever, this you know, new experimental type vaccine.
So the main one's the Sinovac, right?
Yeah, Sinovac.
And that is that what, the attenuated virus, where they take basically a dead virus?
Yeah, that's basically it. They take a dead virus and basically, yeah, the old school vaccine is what Sinovac is. And yes, it is mandated in China, but, you know, it's mandated just in the same way that, you know, when you go to school and all that, you're required to take certain vaccines, and, you know, you're required to have certain vaccines before.
Well, it's mandated. So what's the vaccination rate in China?
Vaccination rate in China? I don't know the exact figures, but it's probably pretty high. But it's with the Sinovac, though. It's not with this weird, you know, bizarre Frankenstein vaccine that you see in the United States.
So the Sinovac is the main one, but there are some other vaccines that are developed, and at least one of them is, it might not be the mRNA vaccine, but it's like the AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson style. I think like it's like a genetically engineered virus that's going to manufacture spike proteins inside of you. I forgot the name for that. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about? It's also, it's Sino something, but it's not Sinovac. Not Sinopharm. I think Sinopharm is the company that makes Sinovac.
Sinopharm is the Chinese national pharmaceutical company.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not too familiar with other ones other than the Sinovac.
Yeah, they have at least one and maybe two others, but the Sinovac is the big one. And okay, so there's a couple others, but the Sinovac, it is the old school vaccine. Now, people around the United States are being pressured to take vaccines, and you know, some people have the, you know, when I say some people, I mean some commentators have a stance where they want everybody to refuse, quit your job, drop out of school, whatever. And I think people have to make their decisions. The costs are not evenly distributed. So for some people, if you're in school and studying something worthwhile on a scholarship, you've got a lot more to lose by taking that stance, by, you know, refusing to take the vaccine and quitting your scholarship, than somebody who is a barrister at Starbucks, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the thing is, we do need people who are in high like high status, high paying jobs, important jobs. And so I think people do have to judge for themselves what they're going to do. Now, for students, it's right now it still seems to be impossible to get that Sinovac unless you're Chinese and you're coming from China, or you're coming from one of these other countries where it's available, including Mexico. It's available in Mexico, but an American tourist as of September 2021 cannot go to Mexico and get the Sinovac. I'm not afraid of the Sinovac, because you're not with the mRNA or this other, you know, where they have I think they call it the viral vector. That's where they genetically engineer a virus that is going to manufacture these spike proteins. You know, you're going to have spike proteins actually manufactured in your own body. The mRNA, I think, is the worst, because it's getting your own body, your own cellular mechanisms to manufacture the spike proteins. With the viral vector, you're having viruses that are introduced, which will manufacture the spike proteins, but the viruses that do this hopefully will be killed eventually and stop manufacturing them. But still, having the spike proteins manufactured in your body this way is, I'm not an expert on this, but to me that sounds kind of scary. To have the dead viruses that have I guess zombie spike proteins on them injected into you is the least scary of all these. And it may well be that within a few months, this might be an option for people who don't want to quit school, don't want to quit their job, because the schools, for the most part, will accept the Sinovac. And you might be able to go to Mexico or another country. I think Panama maybe has it, but Mexico's a close one, and get the Chinese vaccine. Okay, well, I don't know. We're going to be on the break real soon. Do you have any response to that?
Well, yeah. I guess there's two ways. There's two things we have to focus on here. One of them is the U.S. federal government coercion into people taking the vaccine, and different private corporations within the United States coercing their employees to get in the vaccine. That's number one. And number two is the American pharmaceutical monopoly that is coming in the United States, where they say, no, you have to take the American pharmaceutical vaccine. You can't take any other one. You can't take the Russian or the Chinese one. It has to be Pfizer or Moderna.
Right.
Of course, we know both of these are run by, you know, the Pfizer CEO is Jewish, and mm-hmm. Moderna vaccine was created by a Jew, according to one of their articles in the Jerusalem
Post. Right. 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 Okay. Well, we'll be right back.
Come on,
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here's a testimonial from Amazon.com. I am only 40, but I have put my body through hell working in manufacturing for 20 years. I recently started to notice a buzzing feeling along with a stuttering sensation with my heart. I had a full cardio stress done, which I passed. I decided to try Extendivite after getting the jingle stuck in my head. Halfway through the bottle, I really did notice a difference. After getting home from work, I would just sit in a chair for a few hours feeling like crap, and this stuff reduced that feeling along with heart discomfort to almost nothing. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
We're back. All right. So, I just said that some people might want to save their job and, you know, not refuse a vaccine, especially if they can get the Sinovac. There's an Indian vaccine. I'm not sure if that's also the attenuated, but I don't know how available that is. The Japanese, I know, are working on a traditional vaccine, except they're taking their time because they're not rushing it. So there you go. Those things might be available. A lot of people say that the American vaccines are kill shots and that everybody who takes them is going to die, which, well, we'll find out if that's true or not. A lot of people who have taken them haven't died yet. You can say that much. But what's at a bare minimum, what you can say is that having a system of coerced or mandated vaccines at a time when, you know, they're already using gene therapies as vaccines, it sets up an infrastructure by which the government can enforce gene therapies on you. And even if the Pfizer shot and the Moderna shot, even if these aren't kill shots, even if they're not sterilization shots themselves, you're setting up a system in which the government can inflict nefarious gene therapies on the population. Now, I say that. Now, China has always had a very different attitude towards like genetic engineering in humans. They don't have the same moral qualms about certain things. And also, of course, I mean, to the extent that the Chinese would do genetic engineering on their people, would it more likely, I mean, would it be nefarious engineering trying to do bad things to them? Or would they be trying to make like Chinese supermen? I don't know. But I'm just going to kick it over to you now. What do you know and what do you think about genetic testing, genetic engineering in humans in China?
Well, the thing is, China. So China is not, as you know, obviously China is not a Christian nation, unlike the West. And a lot of these, there was a eugenic policies that China has, and a lot of these, you know, genetic, for lack of a better term, genetic modification testing on humans is considered by many people in the West to be unethical and immoral because of their, you know, their Christian moral values. Say, well, you can't do that. But in China, they don't have, you know, they're not a Christian nation, so they genuinely just believe that, oh, we need to advance, and by any means, we need to advance our people to a higher state, essentially. So a lot of these genetic testing that we're seeing, no matter how questionable they are, ultimately it is for the betterment of the Chinese, of the physical body of the Chinese people. And ultimately, as they see, you know, an advancement in science and the next stage of human evolution. So China's genetic modification policies are designed to enhance the Chinese and their eugenics, not dysgenics, which is to, you know, which is what we see here in the United States. It's dysgenics, where they encourage the worst to come out and the best to get, you know, to be destroyed and the worst to come out. And China is the opposite.
So what my impression of the United States and our ruling elite is that the ruling elite wants to, in their mind, degrade the genetics of their potential opponents. And you've got a Jewish-dominated elite, and it seems as if they are trying to get as much third world and preferably African genetics into the larger American genome, and in particular into the white genome. And of course, through most of the American history, you had segregated genomes. I mean, there was a certain amount of white slave owner genes going into the black slave population. There was a certain amount of that in the 1700s, but it couldn't have been that much, because over five generations or so, you only had at most 20% genetic inflow. And so the vast majority of fathers of blacks in the slavery era, the vast majority, I haven't done the math, but the vast majority would have been black. So the white of slave owner having fathering children would have been fairly rare. But aside from that, up until just maybe the past generation, it was the genomes were pretty segregated, and this seems to have been a very high priority for the Jewish elite to infuse as much third world and especially African genetic material into the white genome. But let's see, we'll be up on the break real soon, but I'm going to get your response on the other side, if you care to respond.
Sure, absolutely.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from simplycleanfoods.net, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters. Right now, Amazon Prime members will receive fast 2-day shipping. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's simplycleanfoods.net. But do it today.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Kosher-tified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Kosher-tified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
We are back. Okay, so I raised the proposition that perhaps the Jewish ruling elite was trying to inject as much African and other third world genetic material into the majority white American population as possible in order to better compete with them. That was the general notion. Do you have any response to that?
Well, yeah, I'm sure many people in the alternative media and in the dissident right would be all too familiar with a individual by the name of Richard Kuhnhof Kalergi, who, in the 1930s, talked about basically creating about this pan-European state, which is
pan-European, wasn't it?
Yeah, pan-Europeanism, which has nothing to do with the interests of ethnic European peoples, but the exact opposite, to where he said that. Basically, that the future of Europe will be a Eurasian Negroid race, similar to how the Egyptians became, whether he actually came up with that himself or whether he was just repeating what his Jewish masters told him. I don't believe he came up with it himself. I think he was just repeating what his Jewish masters told him that this was their plan, because he makes overwhelming reference talking about how the Jews are so much superior. And how the Jews are the masters of the universe, not his exact words, but that's basically what he said. And how basically Europe is going to be, you know, it's going to be a mongrel population, just like himself. You know, he was a mongrel himself. He was half European and half Japanese. Mm-hmm. And I think because of that, that's why he resented his fellow, you know, because he grew up in Europe, he resented those around him because he must have felt, you know, he felt inferior to them, or so. I don't know what was going on, but he clearly had a huge resentment.
And the thing is, his Austrian father was a nobleman, mm-hmm. right? And so his peers would have been Austrian nobles and their children. Now, at that time, there was quite a number of Jews who had been ennobled in the closing days of the Habsburg Empire. But from what I can tell, his father was not a Jew. I could be wrong on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's best to assume that we don't know for sure. It's best to assume that they're not, mm-hmm. Just so that way, you know, for credibility's sake. But clearly, he clearly did worship and admire the Jews as, you know, the supermen, and well, not the, maybe that's the wrong word, but basically as the overlords of the world.
And so, you know, who was this Kalergi guy? When I initially heard about this, because the thing is, in the dissident right, in particular, because people in the dissident right are dissidents because they know they've been lied to, and they seem to be, once you know you've been lied to about one thing, then you're wondering, well, what else have I been lied to? And people seem to be very willing to entertain they're lied to about everything. And then B, that there are massive conspiracies that that carry out these lies, and so there is this tendency to think in terms of plans that are carried out by conspiracies, powers that, you know, we can't see but that are very, very powerful. And so I was initially rather dismissive of this whole Kalergi plan idea, but Kalergi himself, he had a great deal of financial backing. He had a very big organization. And so in trying to compare him to somebody of today in certain terms of prominence and maybe his influence, I would think at a very minimum, somebody like Bill Kristol, William Kristol, who, you know, he was one of the co-founders of the Project for a New American Century, which was the architect of the Iraq War. That's a pretty big deal. Or perhaps even as big as like the ADL, which has become our big censorship organization. So I was wrong to just completely dismiss his influence. But at the same time, I do remember being at a bar once, and I don't go to bars, but I was at a bar once, and there was an earthquake, and this guy got up and told God to stop the earthquake, and then the earthquake stopped, and then he wanted everybody in the bar to buy him a drink because he stopped the earthquake.
Were y'all sober then?
I didn't buy him no drink, but you know, just because somebody wants something or somebody plans something and then it happens doesn't mean they made it happen. That's kind of the point that I'm trying to make.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, I mean, that's why I'm of the belief. I don't think Kalergi came up with any of that himself. I think he was just repeating what his Jewish overlord masters wanted him to say or wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, so we have that. Now the situation in China, of course, you don't have any substantial immigration into China. I mean, are like in the border areas? I mean, so much of China's borders, like its borders to the north with Siberia and Mongolia, are so sparsely populated, you really would not expect a whole lot of like Mongolian or Kazakh immigration into China. The south, you got Vietnam and Burma, India, but most of the borders to the west are so mountainous you wouldn't expect people to come through. Is there any substantial immigration into China?
Well, the only immigration that I can think of in China that's becoming a real problem is basically the African immigration into places like Guangzhou, where you have hundreds of thousands of Africans going into China for, you know, this is all part of the Chinese-African, Sino-African friendship program.
Do they come as students or what? Because when I was in China, I did, in Beijing at least, I saw a few students from Africa.
Well, at the time it was definitely much less. But I guess as China is, you know, becoming a global superpower and wanting to extend its diplomacy to other nations, especially very, very poor nations, meaning, you know, those in Africa being the poorest. China does invite, you know, certain people from Africa to come to China to study or, you know, as work visas, as business visas. And the problem is a lot of these Africans, they get these work visas and then they come in and they tear up their passports and they tear up their visas. And they just stay in these enclaves at Guangzhou. I think there's this enclave in Guangzhou. Last time I heard, I don't know if I'm not, I could be wrong about this, but there are about 800,000 Africans living in Guangzhou.
Wow.
Which, you know, to China, I mean, that's, you know, 800,000 is not that big of a number. But if you had 800,000 Africans living in, let's say, and, you know, you already do in many instances, but let's say you had one living in, I don't know, in one of the European cities, that's huge. That's, you know, over half the population.
Well, I mean, even like Guangzhou, if we're talking about the city or the province?
The city.
Which I know is a very big city, but even if you're saying it's 10 million, even 15 million, that 800,000 would be more than 5% of the population. That's a pretty substantial minority.
Yeah, it's huge there. Again, I could be wrong on the 800,000, but that's what a Chinese person told me. But it's huge. It is definitely noticeable. But the Chinese, you know, they're in their own enclaves. They are, you know, quarantined from the rest of the population, so they don't infect the rest of the Chinese population. But they, you know, Chinese avoid going into that area, and rightly so. And the thing is, the Chinese, whenever they misbehave, the Africans, which, you know, Africans are known for, you know, the Chinese, they don't tolerate it like people in the West do. The only problem, though, is because, you know, all these Africans, I mean, you know, they all more or less look the same in terms of, you know, where they came from. The Chinese authorities don't know how to deport them because they don't even know where they came from and they won't admit where they came from. So it's a very difficult situation now for the Chinese authorities. Okay, where are we going to deport these Africans back to? We don't even know which country they came from because they tore up all their paperwork as soon as they got to China.
Wow.
So that's the real substantial problem I could see with immigration. It wasn't a result of, it wasn't because the Chinese wanted to purposely import Africa into China to replace the ethnic Han Chinese and, you know, Chinese minority populations. No, it was just as a result of, 21st century diplomacy.
21st and 20th. And so, you know, even in the 20th century, well, of course, we have the term third world. Who came up with the term third world?
Well, there was Mao. There's two meanings of third world. One, you know, the Western meaning, you know, at the time was basically the first world being the democratic world, the second world being the communist world, and the third world being the non-aligned world.
Mm.
But the second definition is Mao's definition of third world, which basically says the first world is the superpowers, the United States and the Soviet Union. The second world is the colonies of the superpowers, meaning, you know, Europe and Japan and the Soviet satellite states. And the third world is represented by China, which is, you know, the rest of the world that's not colonized by the American Empire and the Soviet Union.
And China being the natural leader of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And so China, for reasons of prestige, wanted to educate the elite of these third world countries.
Exactly.
And you would see this in Moscow too. They brought the elite of a lot of countries to be educated in Moscow, and so you go to Beijing or even Shanghai, and you see these people. The Japanese were doing this in the 80s. They started issuing all these student visas, and were getting people from Gabon and Congo and other places. They wanted to have lots of students. Well, of course, the students come in, and the first thing they do is they go looking for girls.
Right? Yeah. In China right now, in Guangzhou, you do see some of that, where you have these sleazy Chinese women that no self-respecting Chinese guy would get with, Chinese man would get with, that wanders into, Africa town in Guangzhou and gets with some African dude. And yeah, they have kids, and the thing is, because there's a loophole in the whole, you know, child policy rule that basically allows them to have as many as they want. And that's I feel like the more I say, I'm gonna say something.
Yeah, Well,
the air.
Okay. Well, so, I mean, there you go. And so even that, like, that is kind of self-inflicted, right? I mean, these policies, to the extent you'd blame them on Jews, it would be like a couple of degrees removed, right? I mean, they're largely self-inflicted, whether they're talking about Japan or China, making itself vulnerable, because in both cases they wanted prestige and they wanted to educate the elite of the third world and think of themselves as being generous benefactors of the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. But you know, it opened the door, and it, you know, I don't know about China outside of Guangzhou, but in Japan, the immigration now has a pretty substantial toehold.
Is it getting really obvious and really noticeable?
It's definitely on the rise. And if you compare what you would see in a lot of places in Japan today to what you might have seen in a lot of places in America in, say, the 70s, I mean, even if they're 40 years behind, we're going to get there sooner or later, 40 years, if trends don't change. Yeah.
That's definitely not good. And yeah, I mean, Japan especially, China is much, much stricter than Japan in terms of immigration, with the exception of their screw-up, their blunder in places like Guangzhou. But other than that, I mean, yeah, even if you are a foreigner and you make it to China, yeah, don't expect to become a Chinese citizen anytime soon in your lifetime. Whereas in Japan, you know, you still have, it's very hard, but it's not impossible. And in China, it's pretty much impossible. But it's just... Yeah, they got to find a way to deal with the African problem. One thing I want to say real quick about Chinese foreign policy, and you saying that China sees itself as the natural leader in the third world, it's still very interesting, because even today, when China is no longer third world, China is first world, they still see themselves as the natural leader of the third world, and they still are the ones doing the most diplomacy with third world countries, even though they're no longer third world themselves.
Mm-hmm. And they had close relations. You know, there was that whole non-aligned movement that was started, I guess, in the 50s, but it was a big deal. They'd have these big meetings all through the second half of the 20th century, started by Nasser in Egypt, Suharto or Sukarno in Indonesia, Tito in Yugoslavia. Who was the other? Oh, and Nehru in Delhi, in India.
Yeah.
But the Chinese always saw themselves as really being the natural leader of that, and they sought close relations with those countries. Listen, we've got a couple minutes left in this segment, and this is kind of like, well, what's going on with coronavirus in China? A lot of the American Republicans say that China developed this as a bioweapon that inflicted on the United States. Chinese people, are there Chinese people who say this was a bioweapon inflicted on China?
The official, the official policy has been to open Fort Detrick and investigate Fort Detrick, Maryland, for the origins of the virus. And essentially, it is this was a plot by the U.S. military and the intelligence services to unleash the virus in China, because they wanted to knock down China a few notches. Because if you look at, if you want to read, Ron Unz has a really good article on the origins of the COVID-19, actually a four-part series on the COVID-19, where he talks about the origins of where it came from. And he concludes that, yeah, it is from Fort Detrick, Maryland, that it is from the United States. That it was the United States military and, you know, the intelligence services that, brought the virus to China in the Olympic Games.
And what was it? In the military Olympics.
And the... Sorry. The military. Yeah, no. Yeah, not the Olympics, but the military games.
Yeah. Okay. And so why did the military do this? Was it to give them cover because the real target of their bioweapon was the United States? What was the motive?
Well, because these are rogue neocons. These are rogue, unhinged neocons. They're psychotic, who basically wants to, they want the American. They're the epitome of the American Empire. And they don't want any competitors, because if you look at which two countries were the first to get hit,
and is this what Unz is saying?
Yeah, this is what Ron Unz is saying. Yeah, let's run. Sorry, let me pull up.
Okay. Okay, so you pull it up, and we'll talk about it on the other side of the break.
Everybody was kung fu fighting. Those kids were fast as lightning. In fact, it was a little bit frightening. But they fought with expert timing. There were funky China men from funky Chinatown. They were chopping back. They were chopping them down. It's an ancient Chinese art, and everybody knew their part. From a fainting to a slip, and a kicking from the hip. Everybody was kung fu fighting. Those kids were fast as lightning. In fact, it was a little bit frightening. Yeah, yeah. But they fought with expert timing.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
All right, we are back, and I will try to get links up to these Ronan's articles, but you found some interesting material within the articles.
Right, so Ronan's did a huge, basically a huge essay, almost a book-like essay talking about the origins of the COVID-19 and where it came from. And he basically concludes that, yeah, it was the United States who created the virus and aimed it at China. And he wrote four long articles, separate articles talking about it, and then some follow-up articles, which is too long to read on this program. But I will read this bits of this interview between this other guy on the Unz Review. His name is Mike Whitney, and then Ron Unz, and he talks to Ron Unz. And then basically the title is called The COVID Bioweapon, Made in the USA, Aimed at China. And then Ron Unz basically, this is how he, this is one of his quotes. He says, quote, "We are left with the strong likelihood that COVID came from a laboratory and was designed as a bioweapon. China was the intended target, and America seems the likely source of the attack. The most likely subjects would be rogue elements of our national security establishment. The virus and its dispersal devices might have been obtained from Fort Detrick, and CIA operatives would have been sent to Wuhan to release it." So that's what he says.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, here's, you see, this is what I think. And I usually don't talk about what I think about the origin of the virus, because I don't think the origin is that important. I think the main thing is stopping these crazy countermeasures. But my guess, and it's a guess, and I'm prepared to be wrong, and I, you know, I'm not going to get upset if people don't agree with this, but my guess is that this was, if anything, if it was developed anywhere, it was developed in America, released in China, but not aimed at China. It's really ultimately aimed at America by the Americans, with China as a designated patsy. It was released in China so China could be a patsy. China could be the fall guy. China could be blamed. And they needed a virus that wouldn't be so, it wouldn't get too much out of hand, because it's not really that dangerous, but it's enough that it would, you know, serve as the justification for these, for this massive crackdown on the American population. That's my first guess. I'm not wed to it, but that's my first guess.
Well, in a way, that is correct, in a sense that it is aimed at all of us. It's aimed at both the ethnic Europeans and the Han Chinese, and everyone who stands up to this evil American empire. That is, you know, Jog. That's who it's aimed at, all of us.
Yeah. So China being the patsy, and to the extent it's aimed at China, it's not aimed at China biologically, it's aimed at China politically, because they could be blamed, you know, you could have this big crisis, a fake crisis, but then blame the fake crisis on China.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, I remember when the virus first came out, and was people were first talking about it in China, the first thought, I don't know if I should say this on the air, but the first thought that came to my mind was, could it be that it was the United States who came up with it, who invented the virus and put it in China? Was it the military, rogue elements of the United States military, that came up with it and released it on China? Because China and Iran were the first two countries to
Right.
And that was the first thought that came. This is before people even started talking about Fort Detrick. I already thought that. Was it the United States? And I don't know if I should say this on the air, because, you know, people will say, wow, this guy, he's really anti-American. But
hey, no, I mean, I thought that, and there was other people who were talking about that, you know, because the Iranians were amongst the first people who had trouble with it. But at any rate, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you, Dr. Slattery. Look forward to being on next week.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with Mark Collett and another exciting episode of National Beagle Radio.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You can't handle the truth. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you